Hello, everyone, and welcome to Healthcare Perspectives 360, a podcast dedicated to exploring contemporary healthcare issues from multiple perspectives. I'm Jerry Amori, and today I am joined by Chris McCarty, occupational therapist with a master's in physical therapy, who is an inspired and passionate advocate. David Miller, patient experience coach from Johns Hopkins Health System, and Carly Zahn, a practicing board-certified internist and rheumatologist. Today, we're talking about patient advisory councils, what they are, what they do, and how they both help clinicians and patients. But before we begin discussing this very important topic, it's my pleasure to tell you about a comprehensive white paper that has been developed by Covaris, our parent company, and that's available for a free download to anyone who listens to this podcast. The white paper details data gleaned from Covaris medical malpractice claims and offers risk management suggestions to increase your healthcare organization's patient engagement. There is a link right on the podcast landing page. We hope you'll take advantage of this resource. And now, let's begin today's discussion. I'd like to start with you, Chris. We hear a lot about patient and family advisory councils, known as PFACs. In your experience, what is a PFAC? Where did they come from? How did they get started? Are they by service line or hospital or population? What is a PFAC?
Thank you for the question. These councils, near and dear to my heart, have evolved over time, and they were really a mechanism to involve patients and loved ones in decision-making. They go back to the late 20th century, when it was identified as the vitality of including patient perspective in that planning and treatment. And then they gained additional momentum in the 90s with the focus on patient-centered care. The use of the tool can vary by health system, as they can be organized by different sectors, different service lines. And the goal of the councils is to provide input on a variety of patient-related issues, such as wayfinding, policies, programs, facility design, marketing or website review. It's a great collaboration that really, really support patient and loved ones as partners in care.
All right. David, you are our patient coach here. And in full transparency, I have to tell you that I have been a member of our local PFAC for a number of years and a patient advisor, a volunteer patient advisor. And I started doing that when I transitioned into working part-time, right? So people often think that that means I help patients with complaints, which is not what I do. That's not my role. Can you explain to our audience here the differences between PFAC and a patient advocate?
Absolutely. As Chris noted, patient and family advisory councils, very different than patient advocates. They're distinct from one another, and they serve different purposes in healthcare. While PFACs are those formal groups of patients, family, staff, providers, working in that partnership to improve patient experience, they offer that guidance on procedures and processes and quality improvement to achieve high quality, safe, coordinated care. Now, if we take a look at patient advocates, these are individuals who work with patients and their families to help them navigate the healthcare system. They provide support, information, assistance to patients and their families, helping them understand their rights and responsibilities, and ensuring that their needs are met. And they can aid in a whole host of things, from setting up medical appointments to finding financial and legal resources, assisting in locating support groups. But indeed, in some health systems, patient advocates are also patient relations. So if at any point a patient or a family member's expectations aren't being met, they can, of course, bring those concerns to the attention of their care team or the manager of that department. But if the concerns remain unresolved, they can contact patient relations team at the hospital for further assistance. And that's, I think, what you were referencing earlier. Those are the folks that help navigate, listen to what the concern is. Of course, that information is then in turn shared with leadership. There's a formal review, and then obviously the follow-up to the patient and the family regarding those concerns. So I think essentially that is the differentiation between the two.
All right. So to make sure I understand, people on a PFAC or a patient counselor or a patient advisor, a volunteer at the hospital, they just give a patient perspective to whatever projects they're working on, whereas patient advocates actually work with patients to help resolve issues. Did I get that right?
Absolutely.
All right, great. I'm glad I got that right. Okay, Carly. Patient advisory councils and patient and family advisory councils have a unique perspective and a unique ability to identify system blind spots. They can also harness the power of personal narratives to affect change in the system for other patients and families because they each have their experience that, of course, those people working in the system don't see their blind spots, right? The lived experience of these patients and families allows them to see and feel things that providers may not even be aware of and therefore may remain overlooked and unaddressed. So if you work or you're going to an organization, either if you work in one or you're patient at one that doesn't have access to that patient perspective through a PFAC, how do you even get those personal perspectives for the organization? Is there any other means?
Oh, this is a good but challenging question. If it's not feasible for your practice to have a PFAC for some reason, eliciting those perspectives from your patients and patients' families would be a small but impactful way of kind of trying to help identify those blind spots, keeping an open door of communication and just asking them about the challenges and experiences they've had. If you're at a bigger institution or you feel the passion like most of us here do, you could also try to lobby for the formation of a PFAC. So from a physician side of things, we actually have an educational hub through the American Medical Association for creating a PFAC. So there are resources out there. You just need to get on your platform and really help support the creation of one.
Okay. All right. So we need to somehow go out there. I actually know that there's an organization out there for patient interaction. I believe it's called the Barrel Institute that really works to engage patients and has all kinds of resources that are out there if your organization is not quite up to snuff. You know, this is for you, Chris, and I can see a variety of ways in which the method for getting people on a PFAC may actually bias the type of perspectives that are shared, right? I sort of remember way back when we first started doing PFACs, they were patients were sort of cherry picked by what they thought they would do. And they were only allowed to do certain things like pick the color rug in the waiting room, right? Those days are long gone. Now patients on PFACs are, I sit on the patient safety committee of our local hospital, and that's part of my role as, you know, being a patient advisor. So things have changed, but how can we make sure that our PFACs aren't being cherry-picked in a way that they actually only greenlight initiatives that may not actually represent important perspectives or really address true needs? So how could they bias initiatives in the system? And how can we ensure that we have a more representative, diverse PFAC?
That is a great observation, and again, true by historical function. I think as organizations work to establish the PFACs, it should be noted that the representation of the PFAC should very closely resemble that service line that they are representing. You want the demographics to match those that you are serving. That being said, it's also important to get a cross-sectional representation to really look and challenge to ensure that you don't have those biases occurring unintentionally. And, you know, practicing that pause and being reflective to say, we may have this new member, but we really need to get this particular voice at the table. So I think it's very, very important to ensure all of those elements that you're getting all these different healthcare lenses adequately sharing, because it's not always the loudest voice, but also a clear voice.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you a lot. I'm having some thoughts. So I'd like to kind of bounce this out to all of you. And one of those thoughts is that often the people in underserved populations are those voices that we're missing on our PFACs, right? And sometimes they aren't even our largest contingent of users, But definitely it's harder to get them to join a PFAC, for goodness sakes, because they're busy with their jobs. And I mean, you know, and it worries me. It kind of scares me. I want to have everybody at the table because we do serve everybody and we've got to meet everybody's need in our community. So thoughts about how we recruit maybe people from minorities, a variety of minorities, how do we make it palatable to them?
When you're soliciting voices and looking at that, it's no different than a personalized care plan. You got to meet them where they're at. So maybe they can't make that PFAC meeting that is 1 o'clock in the middle of the day, but are there elements of discussion that you can get their information and feedback that can impact care in a different way? No different than our individual work with patients. It's meeting them where they're at and getting those important lenses, looking at the variety of care issues.
Okay. Yeah, Carly.
I think something to consider as well is you kind of hit it on the head before, Jerry. You mentioned the word cherry picking. We cherry pick those that are engaged or compliant. I have a huge issue with that word, but compliant. We cherry pick these patients. A simple first step might be, are we even engaging those who are of different socioeconomic barriers? Are we even approaching them? That might be a question that we're not even asking ourselves in our own PFACs.
That's a good question. Yeah, David, what are your thoughts on this?
So I think a couple of the key words that we've heard so far, community and trust. And I think in partnering and building and being a real presence outside of the hospital in the community strengthens that. And that just fosters a better relationship we have with patients and families within the hospital.
So by doing some more outreach, we kind of let people outside of our usual circle here know that we do care, we do want to hear their opinion and their voice, and we're going to listen. So it might take more outreach to get people representative. I've watched organizations go through that. Sometimes we're blinded by, you know, since most of the people in our catchment are pale, we think that we don't think about the fact that everybody on the PFAC is pale. So we need to reach out. All right, that's good. Thank you. David, I did also want to ask you, the majority of the existing research done on PFACs indicates that implementation of patient advisory councils, patient family advisory councils, has a positive effect on healthcare initiatives and promotes more patient-centered care within the organizations. It's even been said that patient advisory councils positively affect patient safety. Do you see this at your organization?
I do. And, you know, much like what we've discussed, it's that partnership with the PFACs. It's hearing those voices and then having that diversity with respect to culture, race, religion, preference, sexually, socioeconomic, all the educational background, all of those different voices, getting that perspective, we can not only build, but we can actually improve existing programs and services. So for example, there was an initiative about improving hand washing education and understanding and practice. So there was a whole piece about hand washing best practices and educating patients and families that it's okay to ask. And in implementing that, if a provider has washed or sanitized their hands, that just allowed that safety component to improve.
All right, good, good. Carly, how do you imagine that patients that are under your care, you know your patient load, would contribute to a PFAC?
I'll be honest, I don't think every patient's a good fit for a PFAC, and that's okay. I think to truly be an advocate, you need to be open to challenging your own biases and to challenging others' biases, and that may be hard for some people to do. So I think PFACs are unique in that it's a group of people that are all in on this. They're dedicated for this. And that may not be every patient.
Okay. So you have to kind of look and see who might be right and who might not be right. And those people that want to be engaged, you ask them to be more engaged, right? That sounds good. So we're coming to the close of today's episode. And I'd like to ask each of you our usual ending question. So what is the one thing you'd like our listeners to take away from each of your perspectives on the idea of PFACs? Chris, you want to start us?
You know, as a healthcare provider recognize the absolute value that that diversity of voice and thought can bring to how we provide care. We look at life through our own lens. And when we look at those transactional interactions in healthcare through the lens of different eyes, it can be highly impactful how we change and how we learn and grow as healthcare professionals.
Thank you. David, you want to give us your one thing?
Sure. From the patient end, getting involved, having your voice heard, being able to join a PFAC, it's empowering. It gives your perspective in new initiatives and improvements. And then from the provider end, it's that relationship. It's listening to hear, not listening to respond, really taking that into consideration whenever you are implementing whatever that project is.
Hey, good. And Carly?
As a medical professional, we have a unique platform we can use to advocate for change. The biggest thing we need to bring is willingness and time. The evidence is already there for PFACs. There are websites and resources, so I would tell my peers to really consider being advocates for this change and supporting our patients on all levels.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This has been an amazing discussion today on patient involvement in the process of PFACs and patient and family advisory councils. So I'd like to thank you, our panelists, for joining us today and our audience. I look forward to seeing you next time in Perspectives 360.